Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 42. Dave, is that right? It's bye week as the Steelers get a victory over the Detroit Lions on Sunday night, raise their record to 6-2, and now they get a chance to step back, couple practices, some days off, and prepare next week for the Indianapolis Colts. Dave, how you spending the bye week? You lounging in the sun? You going to Tahiti? You know.
I live in.
What do you got planned?
I live in. First of all, it is episode 41. So congrats on
41. Okay. 41.
Congrats on botching that up right out of the chute.
Right out of the chute. I said 41, and then for some reason I thought I heard you say 42. So we got Antoine Romeo Blake. What's it? What did he change his name to?
Valentino.
Valentino.
For those that don't know, you know, David and I put in a lot of planning into each one of these shows. We talked for a good minute ahead of what we get on before we get on and talk about what we're.
Don't give away the special sauce.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is that's true. 40 minutes is how long we talk about it. and going over that, we'd say, okay, David, this is season 8, episode 41, and 20 seconds later, he rattles off episode 42. But it is a bye week. I'm sure half our people aren't listening anyway right now. What am I doing this week? I'm working. You know, the Steelers might be off, but, you know, we've got work to do here. I got to admit that I might make an appearance at one of the local casinos here later on this week for more than just going to go see the man, if you know what I mean. So
So
I got that going on for me. So at least that's nice. What's up with you?
Not a lot. My mom's taken off for a month on Friday, so I stayed in town this week. This is generally, as you know, a week I try to get out of town and do some other things, but. I'm in the Berg, so chance to kind of take inventory to do some as I accidentally hit Periscope when I was filming something from the Lions game, so clean up my apartment a little bit and have at it. So I wanted to mention a couple things. One is Dave has mentioned at the back of some of these podcasts about the donations, and I will do a better job of thanking people individually through some emails over the course of the next week. That's something we pride ourselves in responding to just about all the emails we get. But I just wanted to single out a guy named Adam who gave us an extraordinary donation. He probably knows who he is. I didn't ask permission to use his last name, so I won't go ahead and use that. But our listeners have been so generous through the years. And honestly, it does matter. I'm not working right now, and this is Dave's full-time job. Just extraordinary, the generosity, and whether it's a buck a month or 10 bucks or what Adam did, everything is greatly appreciated. So Adam, thanks to you and thanks to everybody else for their contributions through the years to the show and, much appreciated.
I concur. I really do. It lets you know what we do is meaningful when we get these people to check in, you know, from all over the world, and then when you get donations back, that's like this as well too. It certainly helps you give kind of meaning to what you do. I think, and we certainly do appreciate it. And David, believe it or not, I think we're coming up on our 1,000th podcast together. If you can believe that.
You know, I saw that, and I was wondering if our early podcasts were on iTunes. That's kind of how we know the numbers in the 960s or something like that right now, something like around that range. But and I didn't know if we got them up there right away. But yeah, we've been doing it a long time, so we're in business. Let's get to business. We'll recap the rest of what happened on Sunday. Ben will speak today at 1 o'clock Eastern time, which is not obviously the normal time. It's Tuesday at 11. So we'll have a chance to hear from Ben. We'll talk about that on Friday. And as I mentioned, we will spend Friday's podcast most of the time answering emails that we've gotten from listeners. If you put in Friday podcast question or, you know, something along the lines so it's just easily identifiable when you email the Terrible Podcast so that we can get to that. We've gotten, you know, 30 or so already, so we'll get to as many of those as we can on Friday. So, all right, Dave, let's no Mike Tomlin this week, no Ben so far. So let's wrap things up from the Lions game, having a chance to go back through it and look at things. You know, I don't know if we made enough of Javon Hargrave, but why don't you tee things off? What do you think we missed or what jumped out that you want to talk more about Sunday's victory?
I think more than anything, didn't run the ball very effectively overall. I wonder how much of that, had to do with maybe not having Vance McDonald, around. It'd be interesting to see what happens after this bye week. As I think I said in the other show the other day, boy, I sure think Vance McDonald sure deserves an opportunity to be out there as, you know, in 11 personnel type situations there. I don't think Roosevelt Nix had his best game of the season. In fact, it probably was his worst game of the season. A lot of people probably wondering why Roosevelt Nix lined up, you know, outside, out wide on a few plays and not in the backfield. Yeah, I don't kind of get that either. I wasn't a big fan of that. Surely you could probably use some different personnel to do that. We'll see if they kind of snowball putting that on tape into something else here later on in the season there. But Ben, I know we already, praised him for several throws that he made and slapped some wide receivers on the wrist for dropping some passes and all, but still his deep ball, David, is not there. And, that's going to be the difference, I think, in the second half of whether or not we get back to seeing some respectable stats with Ben. If you look at, next gen stats on NFL.com. Ben's average intended air yards and the difference between that and his completed intended air yards is still, I think, around 4.0, and that's extremely too wide of a gap right there. So need to get that on. Hopefully need to get that deep ball going again. Defensive side of football. Yeah, you put the finger on Javon Hargrave, but I don't think he. You asked me, I think the other day, is he, is he Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt level yet? I don't think so just yet, but boy, he certainly is close. Ryan Shazier, what can you say about him? Boy, I mean, he's got a chance here really to make a run. I think at still a potential. Maybe defensive player of the year. Sure, it's still kind of on the outside looking in, but if he stays healthy, keeps playing the way he has, I think he'll be okay. And I think really, as most people will agree, the pass rush as a whole wasn't great against the Lions. Playing a lot of that zone coverage on the back end of it allowed Matthew Stafford to pick him apart to the tune of 420 something yards, and those kind of things. Thankfully the Steelers red zone defense stood tall, but how many times are you going to keep teams from going 0-5 in red zone trips there? So that needs to be tightened up as well moving forward there. So that, I think that's a kind of a broad brush things that stuck out to me the most after going back through the tape several times.
Yeah, you mentioned Ben. Ben is actually the cover story on ESPN.com on the website right now. Ben Roethlisberger hiding in plain sight by Hallie Grossman. I don't know who Hallie is. This is kind of a feature story talking about Ben Roethlisberger and his future plans. And Ben opened that door very much this summer and, this spring. And I think I did, and I think Dave did. Most people who follow the Steelers closely, the beat writers, et cetera, kind of just waved this off as, just Ben conversation. And maybe we did it a little bit of a disservice. And Ben made that point really in his first media, the first media scrum that he had with the beat writers when he got to camp at the end of July. He said, look, I'm here and I'm committed to being here, which is something that, he opened that door again 2 weeks ago. But he said, I'm committed to being here, but this is something I do every year and annually I think about it. And I think it has now gotten enough of our attention that it is a topic of conversation amongst Dave and I and amongst people who cover the Steelers and follow the Steelers and root for the Steelers as to how long is Ben going to be the quarterback. Now, that's always a topic of conversation. And if you look at the other side of things, Tom Brady and his – his book that he put out in September, The TB12 Method, and the cover story on ESPN the magazine this week, and the Patriots trading Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, it is not unrealistic to think at age 40, Tom Brady will be the quarterback of the New England Patriots 4 years from now, Dave. Ben Roethlisberger at age 35 or 36, whatever he is right now. I don't, you know, I've said it all along 2020, but I hedge on that a lot more now than I did. And it's, I think his contract's up in 2019. So he is the topic of conversation. He is the driver of this team, as every quarterback is. He is the reason the Steelers probably the kind of unsatisfactory feeling that we've had about the first half of the offense. And again, I haven't had a chance to read this article yet, but it's not a, you know, Ben looks awkward in his seven step drop, or Ben's not stepping up in the pocket, or Ben's not hitting the deep ball. This is more a, what's the life plan of Ben Roethlisberger, and where's he going to be going forward? Certainly, that will, you know, that'll be the biggest factor for the Steelers in the next 3 years, is the transition when that occurs from Ben Roethlisberger to whomever is next.
Yeah, and look, David, I understand the things that he says, you know, and take note of them. And I think every year moving forward, assuming this isn't his last year, we're going to be talking immediately after the season, especially if it's not, doesn't culminate in a Super Bowl win. And maybe even if it does, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, come back. Look, he's only won only won a couple Super Bowls so far. You got to think.
Which is more than virtually everybody else in the world.
Right. But, I mean, how many did Bradshaw win? Look at the defense right now, David. If you're a quarterback and you're playing for the Steelers, you have to look at that defense and think, man, we're going to have opportunity to win a ton of games over the course of the next 2 years at least. All right? If you look at this offense.
Yeah, he's got all his boys coming back on the offensive line. And let's be clear, it's not the wide receivers. It's not anything else. His boys are the O-line guys.
Right. And, you know, he'll make sure, you know, he mentions them in every interview. He's got Antonio Brown, the arguably the league's best wide receiver, locked up over the next couple.
And Juju.
And this guy that plays in the slot, kind of decent guy. I don't know if you saw my exchange with someone on Twitter. You know what? When I get done blogging from Mom's Basement, I'm gonna poorly write a book about Twitter arguments that I've had over the years. I could do that with ease. You know, you got Juju on the scene now. Who the hell cares what happens to Martavis Bryant? And I mean that sincerely. Who the hell cares what happens with Le'Veon Bell? And I do mean that sincerely, even though Le'Veon Bell is once again one of the better backs in the league. I think the running back position, you know, my view on this, David, and has been a while, I kind of view the running back position as fungible. Now, it is nice when you get something that's fungible plus one, which Le'Veon Bell is. But I think in a nutshell, with that defense that they have, with that offensive line, and with Antonio Brown, assuming Ben doesn't fall any more off the cliff than he has already, this team can win a couple Super Bowls. I think Ben knows that overall. And I guess, to sum things up, I still will be surprised if Ben calls it quits after the 2017 season.
Okay, I'm with you. All right, so let's wrap up the Lions game. I think you touched on a lot of the major components. We're not going to know the status of the injuries. Mike Mitchell, Chris Hubbard. I would expect Hubbard to be back and ready. I would expect Marcus Gilbert to be back from his hamstring injury. I would hope that Stephon Tuitt's back from his back injury. That's unclear. We don't have any kind of guideline on the knee injury Vance McDonald. The only guideline is nobody suggested there was surgery was necessary. So you would think kind of from the day of the injury to the day of the game, having 3 weeks off for him will do the trick. So we'll see. The Steelers got banged up for the first time a little bit in that game. Then maybe the thing I meant to mention this on Monday, somehow it escaped me, but Cam Sutton, the Steelers' third-round pick, the cornerback out of Tennessee, was eligible to come back to practice last week, has been started practice yesterday for the first time. You know, now the clock is ticking 21 days until he's able to be taken off the designated injured reserve, designated to return list, and become part of the 53-man roster, which of course would necessitate a roster move by the team. Sutton back. Dave, I would assume, and the feeling that I got and kind of the understanding is Cam Sutton's been good to go now in terms of being 100% physically healthy. The Steelers, once they acquired Joe Hayden, that was an easy decision to make, to no need to kind of carry him along like they did with some guys last year who ended up kind of – Senquez Golston, for instance, never did make it back, obviously. So they do that with Cam Sutton. He's back practicing. I would assume, Dave – it'll be all 3 weeks, but I will also assume that Cam Sutton will be added to the 53-man roster. And we'll see, you know, who gets hurt between now and then. But everybody says, you know, who's the obvious guy? Well, you know, I wouldn't be looking to buy if I were Cody Sensabaugh right now. He's the guy, obviously, in the defensive backfield who has seen the least amount of activity. He's dressed, I think, actually every game. Maybe he missed one, but I think he's dressed every game. But he's not played in any of the base, very little of the sub package, and he's not a key special teams guy. So he would seem to be the guy. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I concur. And let's be clear about Sutton. You know, he had to miss the first 8 weeks of the season, which he's done now. He could have returned to practice a couple of weeks ago, but they chose not to start the clock on him. Smartly, I think that was a wise decision considering the health of your team at the time. So now that the 8 weeks has passed, even though they've started the clock on him Tuesday, he can now return at any given time over the course of the next 21 days. Now, how long the Steelers use of that? Look, you want to make sure you get a good look and check his conditioning out in practice over the course of the next probably few weeks. You don't want to activate him back from IR and him first trip down chasing down a punt or whatnot, that hamstring goes again and then you lost him for the season. So yeah, I barring an injury to the guys already in the secondary, David, I think you'll probably see him on the latter end of those 21 days and you will closer to the beginning of it as well. Now, barring injury, Cody Sensabaugh, you would think, would be the guy. Cody has been kind of on and off as a gunner. Geez, has he even played a defensive snap? If he has.
I think he did. I think he got one or two in one of those games. But, you know, not many.
Yeah. You know, what does Cody Sensabaugh give you, you know? Look, do you remember there was a time in the preseason we were talking about two dogs, one bone with Ross Cockrell and Cody Sensabaugh, who's going to be the starter? Do you remember that? It seems like 2 years ago now.
It does seem like forever. You're right. No doubt.
And now here we are talking about Joe Hayden, and boy, will they or won't they activate, you know, Cameron Sutton to the 53? My, how things have changed. Here's the thing. If you if the health stays where it is now, you can bring Sutton back. You can turn Sensabaugh loose. And on top of it, I think if you needed Sutton to maybe cover, I think you could get a look at him as a gunner because they sure have seemed to flip-flop a lot of guys opposite DHB as punt returner. So that's an area Sutton could get some snaps at. And, oh, yeah, this guy wasn't a bad punt returner at Tennessee. And I don't know what you think about the Steelers' punt returns this year. They haven't been great at all, so why would it hurt to let a rookie guy, even though, you know, Tomlin likes to shy away from letting rookies and let alone defensive rookies return punts, why not give this guy a crack or two at it as well? I don't think that he'll see much, if any, snaps in the defense until maybe later on in the season. But even then, if your defense is playing well, you know, the age-old saying is, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I would think that because Sutton's part of the future and Sensabaugh is not, that because if he's not activated, he won't be able to practice. He'll get the 3 weeks of practice, but then he'll have to revert to IR and then not practice. I would think that what they expect and hope for him going forward. I mean, you know, this isn't anything close yet to the Sundquist-Golson case, but, you know, this is a situation where if you can just get him the reps the rest of the year, even if he's just plays a couple special teams snaps, that will put him, you know, far, far ahead going into next year's training camp where, you know, he might be a contributing member. You think about guys who aren't going to be back next year, William Gay, high on that list. So, you know, spot open potentially for Cameron Sutton. Okay. So, Dave, why don't we kind of roll through position groups and
David, I got some breaking news here for you. The Steelers did not trade Martavis Bryant ahead of the
deadline. They didn't. Good to know. Okay. I got to tell you, I was sitting around in front of the computer, kind of my eyes locked on the screen from 8 to 4 yesterday. Just wondering what was going to happen.
I'm so glad that damn trade deadline is passed, man.
Well, let's do that. Let's hit on that for 1 second, why not? Let's hit on that for 1 second because that was kind of some, you know, people throw around different terms, whatever. There were some trades that caught us by some surprise and some that didn't. And there were four big names that moved in the past couple of days. So let's hit them. I'll hit them in the order that I think is least important. Depending on what team you are, I guess they all matter. So let's start with the big one. Jimmy Garoppolo goes to San Francisco. A lot was written. Bill Barnwell wrote a pretty good piece on it on ESPN.com, talking about the ramifications for all the different teams and players involved. Garoppolo goes for what we expect to be a high second round pick. Straight up, Brian Hoyer is going to get signed here by the Patriots probably on Tuesday of next week. Or sometime between now and then to be their backup quarterback. Dave, just level of surprise. It seemed to catch everybody in the Patriots and the Niners organization by surprise. Winners, losers, who do you like on that deal?
I'm not surprised by it because, look, I mean, if they didn't trade him now, this was the last opportunity to trade him before losing him during the offseason and then having to wait another full year for a compensatory draft pick that you don't even know. I even think Bill Belichick knows the formula of compensatory draft picks, and you don't know how it's going to balance out with your other picks and all like that. So this was the time to get what you could get as far as a draft pick that you could use really now. And like it or not, San Francisco is still probably going to be top 1, 2, 3 pick overall. So it's almost like having a late first round draft pick that you got for Jimmy. I like this deal for both teams. You're not going to win in the NFL without a quarterback. San Francisco needed one. They tried C.J. Beathard. You know, they tried Hoyer. That's not going to work. They probably looked at the class of guys coming out and probably are a little lukewarm on that right now as well. Jimmy's done some good things when he's played. I think he'll fit in right there, and I think that he makes them be able to compete right away. The Patriots, for all the reasons I said, at least they got something for him now. The only way this trade will be questioned is if something happens to Tom Brady the rest of the season. If Tom Brady goes down with an injury for a long period of time, then people are going to say, oh, finally, we caught Bill Belichick making a bonehead move. But I don't think you can make moves like that. You know, Brady's been healthy for 98% of his career. I like the deal for both teams, David.
I agree. And, there, you know, I saw a couple of different things. You know, there's one view that anybody can play quarterback in the Patriots system. There's another view by a guy who I think does some very good work who said the Patriots are so bad right now that the only way that this team can achieve anything in the playoffs is with Tom Brady as the quarterback. So it really doesn't matter whether we're going to be Brian Hoyer or Jimmy Garoppolo. Obviously, we're not going to, you know, those are just both opinions on the extremes, one side or the other. And as I mentioned up top, it looks like, you know, Brady's going to play for, you know, how, you know, 3 to 5 more years potentially. So I agree with you. I think they did it. Maybe they would have gotten more at the beginning of the year, but at the beginning of the year, you have the whole season in front of you. Now you're just down to the final 8 games for them on the bye, like the Steelers. So I'm with you. Both sides win. Seattle, they finally get their left tackle. This was the least surprising trade of all. It's been discussed for months going back to the preseason. Dwayne Brown gave up $5 million of his own, sitting out the first half of the year, comes back, plays one game in Seattle, ironically, that the Texans lose. Now, he was the public relations spokesman for the Texans in this whole mess, even only being back a week or two with Bob McNair. And he gets moved, Dave, for Jeremy Lane didn't pass his physical, so he stays with the Seahawks. So I think it was a second-round pick next year, and the Seahawks and the Texans exchange a third and a fifth. So no surprises here, and to me, an easy win for Seattle. And, you know, Houston been living without him, and Deshaun Watson's a mobile guy. Rather have him than not, but clear some cap space and – again, kind of looks to me like probably a good trade for both sides.
Yeah, I think it is a win-win. Like, as you said, to have been able to play and win without him, definitely not happy with some of the recent things that went on there in Houston. The Texans get some draft picks back out of this deal on top of it. They dump a little bit of salary cap money in the process. And, oh, yeah, Seattle really, really, really needed a tackle. I don't want to say he's superstar, but he's good. He can definitely help them over there. So I think this is a win-win for both teams here.
Okay. These other two trades, I think, did catch people off guard. Adam Gase, in his third year now, I think, down at Miami, of course, was with Denver as the offensive coordinator. The Dolphins were the surprise playoff team last year. The Steelers, of course, knocked them out. Ryan Tannehill didn't play in that game. Matt Moore was the quarterback, and Matt Moore is now with Jay Cutler injury, was the quarterback playing the Ravens on Thursday night last week. They got absolutely smoked and looked awful in the process, 44-7. And you rarely hear a head coach be as critical of a unit or his team as Adam Gase was after that over the ensuing 4 or 5 days. Just ripped his offense from top to bottom. And most notably here, and you know, I think this is important, is he talked about guys not taking the game home with them, not doing the work that was necessary. And I don't know, the two most damning things you can ever say about an athlete are lack of effort and lack of preparation. And Adam Gase was clearly pointing fingers. So you knew something was going to happen here at the trade deadline. And it did. And Jay Ajayi is the guy. There's lots of questions, you know, coming out of Boise State, a third round pick, about his knees and his cartilage and, you know, how long he would last. Last year, his numbers were, there's nothing to say about it. They were excellent. He was not a huge success runner, but he was a huge elusive runner. A guy who hit, I think 10 carries of 25 yards or more. This year, he's also been down on success, and he's not been as elusive. And clearly, at least in Adam Gase's mind, who's probably the only guy who matters, he's not doing the work. So he goes to Philly for a fourth-round pick, Dave. Winners, losers here.
I'm not a huge Ajayi fan from a six. Consistent success run rate. Gase pretty much put his finger on it. Kind of what I've said about Ajayi, throughout his young career. He's usually an all or nothing guy. He'll hit you the home run, and then his next 15 runs won't be jack squat. And I think Adam Gase, in so many words, said he's got to quit trying to hit the big run every run. You know,
Hit the hole that you're supposed to hit and get what you're supposed to get.
Yeah, 4 yards in a cloud of dust is just fine. A lot of times, not great in pass protection. We'll see. Look, I understand why the Eagles did it. Are they a better team with him? Yeah, I think so. Even though I'm not a big fan of Ajayi's, I think with what they had there with Smallwood LeGarrette Blount's going to give you the same kind of ball he's given teams throughout the whole year. But, at least Ajayi is definitely that home run threat. I'm just not.
I'm with you. It's a really good matchup for the two runners that they had.
Right. It's almost like a thunder and a lightning type situation here for sure.
And Ajayi, one thing that he is good, he's a very good pass blocker.
I wouldn't say very good. I mean, he's adequate.
He's better than the two guys they have. How's that?
Okay, all right. That sounds good.
So okay, I'm with you. I think the price was not high. You know, Howie Roseman's he's an active guy, the GM for the Eagles. He's not afraid to go out and take some risks. It makes it fun if you're an Eagles fan. And boy, I tell you, if you're an Eagles player, we talk about this all the time in baseball at the trade deadline. You know, do you show faith in your team or not? I think it's way overblown from a media perspective. But it certainly feelings exist. And the Astros were bitching about their front office not doing anything at the trade deadline. Well, they had to go to the kind of the waiver wire trade deadline, and they got Justin Verlander. And, you know, we saw the impact of that. Well, I think there's probably some good feelings in Philly amongst the fan base and the locker room about adding a guy like that. So I'm with you. We'll see if the Dolphins just collapse here down the stretch. Can't expect a lot from them. Kenyon Barner, I guess. Is he the guy? Is he the guy now?
No, you mean Drake.
Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake.
Right. The Dolphins, one would think they should have been able to at least get a third out of that, right? I mean, did they just be gone, give us a fourth and let him be gone? I don't know. Here's the thing about Ajayi, too. He's probably going to bitch about his contract after the year was over anyway. You know, heading in.
Does he have just his option? Does he have 1 year left?
I think, if memory serves me.
This is his third year.
Right,
so,
he should have one more year after this one. Usually the guys start wanting that new contract heading in to the final year of their final contract, right? So at least they got the headache out of there. So, you know, they got a fourth in return, right?
Okay, and we talk about unhappiness. Well, clearly some unhappiness in Carolina amongst the locker room. In the locker room, displeasure voiced by a couple of players on Twitter about moving Kelvin Benjamin to Buffalo for a third and a seventh. And again, you want to talk about ecstatic. I'm sure Tyrod Taylor and people in the players in the Buffalo locker room were absolutely thrilled about this. Again, the new GM up there who came from Carolina and the head coach, both intimately familiar with Kelvin Benjamin. This was not an attitude issue. He gets moved, so they get the number one receiver that they lost when they moved Sammy Watkins in the offseason. So it's an ad, a nice ad for the Bills. For Carolina, there was a great article. I'm unfortunately drawing a blank on who wrote it, about how they thought in their offense, looking at what Funchess has done, saying that what he and Benjamin bring to the offense is exactly the same thing. And the fact that the two of them, they don't have when they're on the field, they don't have anybody to take the top off the defense. It really clogged up the middle of the field. Greg Olsen coming back in a couple weeks. They feel like it's really stuffed their running game as well. So they wanted more playing time for some of the young burners that they have on that team. Guys that, you know, probably most people haven't heard of, to be honest with you. But that was, like it or not, that was the logic behind things for Carolina. I think they got a reasonable return, Dave. Winners and losers in this one.
Yeah, I've always kind of been a Kelvin Benjamin fan, David. I know he's been hurt and all like that, and he's gained some weight here and there as well. Probably hasn't produced maybe like a lot of people thought he could do. I understand, just for the reason that you stated with Funchess and all like that, why Carolina did it. And, this is another guy who's they picked up his fifth year option recently, so I think he's scheduled to earn something like $8.5 million in 2018. So now it'll be up to the Bills to work out a long term deal with him moving forward. And, you know, the Panthers probably said, look, you know, now's the time probably to deal him, you know, and get out from underneath that fifth year option next year. So I understand it. And we'll see what the Bills can do with him. You know, he's a good red zone threat. We'll see. All these deals yesterday or the last few days, David, it's very easy to see why, in my opinion, why both sides did it. And I think it's hard to carve out a true winner or loser in all of them.
Yeah, or, you know, like we've said on a lot of these deals, it's you have to judge the deal from what you know at the time of the deal. So it seems to me like the Garoppolo, as you said, a winner both sides. Seattle, the Dwayne Brown trade, kind of winner both sides, certainly for Seattle. And the acquisitions for Philly and Buffalo are winners. We'll see if those guys end up producing. I think Carolina got enough value. Miami, that was maybe its addition by subtraction. They want to move on. So, like you said, you can kind of see where all eight teams were, what they were thinking, now that we have a chance to digest it. All right, Dave, pull up your standings. Let's
Now, wait. Let's talk about the trade that didn't happen.
I can't.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you've been all over the Cleveland Browns depot.
I thought you were going back to Martavis.
No. I want to hit your second favorite team, the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, Browns depot. As I think people probably know the story now. Apparently, a deal was agreed upon between the Browns and the Bengals at 355. AJ McCarron, of course, in his fourth year. A fifth or sixth round pick out of Alabama. You remember, I think they won the national title. It's always a good guess with Alabama. Played against the Steelers in that playoff game where all hell broke loose that the Steelers ended up winning. Hasn't played much since, to be honest. Hasn't taken a snap this year. He gets moved to Cleveland apparently for a second and a third. And remember that when you think about Garoppolo going for a second. And somehow the information does not get communicated to the NFL. Now, initially it came out that the Browns were high-fiving and, you know, patting themselves on the back and didn't get an email in or a notification to the NFL. Then, according to the Browns, they sent something to the Bengals, and the Bengals, they had sent signed documents to the Bengals, and the Bengals were supposed to forward that to the NFL. That's kind of been confirmed, but it's also been confirmed that the Browns didn't do necessarily what they were supposed to do. So not exactly 100% sure where the blame lies here. The reality is it's just – beyond belief, the negligence that somebody didn't do what was necessary to file. It's almost beyond the point of comprehension, Dave. When you're working that hard to negotiate a deal, you don't just say, okay, deal done. You and I and everybody else knows you have to notify the league. So it's the story, you know, at some point we'll hear all the truth about it, like the Von Miller fact, or the who was the guy with the facts for the Broncos that didn't go through, and he ended up going to the Ravens. It'll come to me. He's now in.
Keep talking.
So his contract did got faxed. Elvis Dumervil, right. So you know, things like that have happened, but you don't expect them to happen. My takeaway from it is, the Browns should be patting themselves on the back that the deal didn't happen, because I don't care what you think of AJ McCarron. He's a free agent at the end of the year. There's no chance in hell you should be spending a second and third round draft pick to give an 8-game tryout to AJ McCarron. We don't know exactly what AJ McCarron is, but I'm pretty sure we know what he isn't. And you get a chance to sign him in the offseason if you want anyway. And you get two draft picks. You can move up in the draft. You've got a bazillion draft picks. We've talked about it forever. You can draft quarterbacks with those picks. I mean, I don't think you've done enough to know what DeShone Kizer is. I don't know that McCarron's his ceiling's higher than Kizer. You have Kizer for three more years. To me, Dave, it's stupid if they didn't file the stuff, and it looks not very smart if that was the deal they agreed to. So the Browns kind of losers either way in my book.
As the now late Charlie Murphy would say on the Dave Chappelle show, wrong. I think you're wrong here. I really do, and I'm going to tell you why. I don't have posters of AJ McCarron up in my office. Now his wife, that would be a different story. I think he's done enough to warrant an opportunity. He has had success in the limited playing time that he's had with Hugh Jackson as the offensive coordinator there. I have kind of, you know, written on Twitter over the course of last year that I thought, you know, hey, the Browns should make a move for a guy like McCarron. Here's the thing. I've said this for several years. You're not winning in the NFL if you don't have a quarterback. And when we've talked about the Browns specifically, if you remember me saying going into drafts, I've told you, I said, David, I'd spend two draft picks a year on quarterbacks if I'm the Browns until I hit one.
Yep.
I don't care what the cost is, if it was a second or a third or whatever. Here's the thing. You caught an 8-week tryout. Even if that's a kid, now here's the thing to remember here. There's some discrepancy as to whether I think there's some discrepancy as to whether or not McCarron will be a restricted or unrestricted free agent after the season. I think one of the Cincy.
Yes, that's true. That's going to go to an arbitrator. So that's a good point. That's a very good point. That I was wrong on that.
Okay, and now Mike Florio, which, you know, say what you will, he usually knows his legal end of the CBA and all like that. He seems to think that McCarron's going to be a restricted free agent. So if that's the case, you easily retain him with a first round. Or, you know, a first round restricted tender of $4 million. So another.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, my bad on that. That's a very good point and changes my view a little bit. Okay. So go ahead.
Okay. So now you've got Kizer still that, you know, which, boy, I wonder what's going through that kid's head after it's still not working through. You got a young kid in Kizer that can sit back and take his time. It gives you, you know, a year and a half, maybe. To see what Hugh Jackson, at least you know what Bill Parcells used to say, you want me to cook dinner, at least let me buy the groceries, right? You're giving Hugh Jackson one of the, you know, some prime ingredients that he's used to working with. So then, in other words, if you can't get this team winning by middle of next season, all right, all bets are off then. But I think that even if it would have been a second or a third, you know what? I would even give him a first, David, to be quite honest.
Well, no, it was just so we're clear. It was a second and a third.
Okay, yeah, okay. I would have gave them a first and a third.
Here's the question. Is you're picking at – is it fair to say that the Browns are going to pick in the top three in the draft?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, so by doing that, to get A.J. McCarron – you're giving up either, you know, let's say Sam Darnold comes out. Let's say he doesn't. Okay, so, you know, he's a wild card in the equation. But you're giving up – it means you're trading either Josh Rosen or Saquon Barkley or, you know, pick you know, whoever – the kid from Wyoming. I haven't seen enough of him to have any view on how good he is. But he's, you know, on Kuiper's big board, he's a top five guy in the draft. I mean, so you have three potentially top quarterbacks – And if you don't like one of those, you have Saquon Barkley as a running back. I mean, that means you're trading that stuff for A.J. McCarron. And to me, that's just too much. But that wasn't on the table, so let's not go to that. But the idea is if you trade for McCarron and you give up your second and your third, so you have McCarron and Kizer on the roster, and you're going to pick in the top three, does that mean you don't pick Rosen or Darnold, or you say just go ahead and pick them and you can't have too many good quarterbacks?
I think here's what I think. If you still had that top draft pick in there and you have McCarron and you have Kizer, if you don't have a shot at
Rosen or Darnold, let's say.
No, at that point I'm thinking get me Barkley or nothing. And if I can't get Barkley, then I deal that pick for a bunch of ammunition, you know, to get me some other stuff there. So if I have McCarron, if I have Kizer, then I'm going into the draft thinking, boy, I sure want to get Barkley. But if I can't get Barkley, then I'm jumping out of the spot. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I mean, it's obviously what the Browns have been killed for year after year after year. I mean, the past 2 years for, you know, whether you like – I think a lot of it, some of it's hindsight. Of course, they did pass on Goff and Wentz, no doubt about that. The Deshaun Watson stuff, look, you know, 11 teams in the NFL passed on Deshaun Watson and the Kansas City went and got Pat Mahomes. So we don't actually know the answer to kind of – you know, whether that was good or not, but Watson certainly looks like he's off to a great start. So, okay, that's the trade deadline. Pretty interesting, and good to bring that Browns thing up. That escaped my mind. So another Tony Grossi of the ESPN Cleveland wrote Browns comedy of errors turning franchise into a Shakespearean tragedy. Mary Kay Cabot wrote about him a couple of weeks ago, talking about some discord maybe between the coaching staff and the front office. So, you know, we talk about it as the Steelers turn for the Browns, it doesn't turn. It just stays in the same direction of nothing going right for that franchise.
Is this it for Hugh Jackson?
I don't think so. I don't. I'd be surprised even if they go 0-16 or, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter if you go 0-16 or 2-14. Is there anything symbolic about it? It's 2 years. I think you have to give him one more year. I don't think the season ticket base is going to change whether they win two games or not. I come back to the thing I always say in these situations. If he's clearly not the right guy, if you've decided that he is not the right guy to run a franchise for whatever reason, he's not the offensive mind that you thought, he can't develop quarterbacks, which was his primary strength. He doesn't know how to control a locker room. He can't do the things that come with running a team. If you think those things, obviously you have to move on. But if it's just based on the record, probably not.
Have you taken down the pictures of Sasha?
No, Sasha and Dee Podesta are still hugging in my bedroom.
Okay. All right.
They get one more year as well. Good gosh, they lost that game without Myles Garrett and Jabril Peppers. We'll see if they get a win here sooner or later. All right, so let's get to the NFL standings as we run a little bit of a different course today than anticipated, but I'm liking it. So pull your standings up, Dave, and let's pick our playoff teams for the end of the season. Let's see if we can see how our views have changed and where we are, if we have similar opinions about what's going to happen here.
All right, I got mine.
Okay, so let's go division by division, and we'll start in the AFC East. The Bills are a bit of the surprise team. Rex Ryan leaves, and the defense has now been great. I think they lead the NFL in points against per game, which at the end of the day is the most important statistic. Who wins the division? Are the Patriots, they're not scoring points, but four straight games now they've given up less than 20, I think. Maybe they've solved their defensive woes. Who's winning the division?
Oh, New England's winning that division. You know it. I know it. Everybody listening knows it. Now, say what you will about the Bills. They got a seemingly tough schedule the rest of the way. You know, the Jets have been playing better than most people thought. I think they got the Saints on there. They have to play the Patriots twice. They have to play – who else they got to play? Kansas City along in there somewhere as well too. So I'm not even ready to go ahead and hand a wild card to the Buffalo Bills just yet. But I guess we're picking division winners first. I'm telling you, New England's going to win the division.
Okay, is it, the Steelers, they can't actually clinch the division this weekend, but both the Ravens and the Bengals are on the road. They're both going to be underdogs. The Ravens go to Tennessee. The Bengals go to Jacksonville. If they were both to lose, they'd both have five losses to the Steelers, too, and will have lost a head-to-head matchup to the Steelers. I mean, if you look at Football Outsiders and any of the other various websites that – talk about percentage of making the playoffs. The Steelers are already generally above 95%. Dave, is there even a scenario you don't see the Steelers winning the AFC North?
Yeah, it'd have to take some injuries. It would have to take several injuries, David, I think. I don't see how they don't win the division. So give the North to the Steelers.
The North. Okay. The AFC South. And this is the most interesting in terms of division races and the least interesting in terms of actual football teams. Is it locked and loaded now for the Texans with the quarterback change and what they have?
Boy, you have to like them, right? I mean, geez, Deshaun Watson's playing out of his mind. Here's the thing, man. That Jacksonville defense is good. It's not an aberration, I don't think. They've obviously added to it. David, I'm going to go on a hunch here and say Jacksonville ends up winning this thing in the South.
Okay.
What do you have?
I'll take the Texans, but we'll come back to that. I like the Jags, and I love me some of that defense as well. So, all right. So one difference there, and then out west, the Broncos I think really showed their true colors on Sunday night. Trevor Siemian went from kind of everybody's darling 2 or 3 weeks into the season to, my God, should he be, starting or even on the roster. He was made two of the worst interception throws you'll ever see in that game. That division's completely fallen apart, where you thought you had four really strong teams, and now I'm not sure you have two. And the second might be the Chargers. If you look at point differential, the Chargers have a better point differential than both the Raiders and the Broncos. The Raiders got just stuffed in Buffalo this weekend after playing an entertaining game of the Chiefs. I got the Chiefs winning the division.
Yeah, hard to, you know, I thought maybe ahead of this last week, maybe Oakland could have something to say there. But, you know, I think it's easy to see this is all Kansas City now. So, yeah, give me New England, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, and Kansas City in the AFC.
All right, I've got New England, Pittsburgh, Tennessee, and Kansas City. And the thing here is now you look at it and you look at the rest of the teams and you say, okay, the Jets have been a surprise, but they're not making the wild card. The Dolphins look like they're just a disaster. It's hard to get behind them. The Browns are out of it. The Bengals, you know, squeaked by Indianapolis, and the Ravens have been erratic. The Colts are out of it. And then you've got the other two teams are in the conversation along with the Bills. And then you look out west and you say, who do you like here? I mean, you know, they all have – two of them have pedigree, and the Chargers have actually been playing better than the other two. So, Dave, I'll go first, and I'll take the Bills and the Jags as my two playoff teams, wild card teams. And that, the Bills get the longest, I think, playoff drought by any of the four major professional sports leagues if they make the playoffs. And certainly the Jags haven't been there in a while. So some fresh blood there, and from people thinking three teams from the AFC West to one for me.
Boy, have you seen the rest of the Baltimore Ravens schedule, David? You know, Tennessee, I think, is their big game, one of their big games this week. Tennessee, Green Bay, Houston. I think Detroit will be a tough game. Obviously, rematch with the Steelers, Cleveland, Indianapolis, and Cincinnati. Ravens defense has been playing good. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, with a guy like Alex Collins on offense, even though Joe Flacco hasn't been great, it's going to be a scenario if you can lean on your defense and run the football into these cold months, maybe they can do something. Now, you know.
They are 4-2 in the conference, I will say that. So, I mean, that makes this week's game is a huge game for them.
Sure is. And then, of course, the one – look, they should be able to beat Green Bay, even in Green Bay, one would think. You know, will they have something for Deshaun Watson in, you know, with that Houston game? We'll see. I guess what I'm getting at
– I'll be – so Green Bay, look, you know, we don't know what we have with Huntley. It doesn't look great here early, but I wouldn't just assume that they walk into Green Bay and get a win.
I guess what I'm saying is I think they can go 6-2 in the second half, David, and that's a better record than what I thought they would have had initially. I think if they can get to 10-6, or even if they can get to 9-7, David, I think they're going to have a shot at this wild card this year. So give me the Ravens as one of these teams, and give me the Texans as the other one.
Okay, so our differences come down to the Ravens and the Bills as the wild card. Okay, let's go NFC, and start in the East. The Giants are obviously a terrible disappointment. The Redskins, the blocked field goal in the Cowboy game, what a huge difference turned around. The Cowboys beat them up in the second half. The Cowboys lose Ezekiel Elliott this week now. It looks like finally it's going to go play by play, it feels like, you know, with this suspension. But so I've got the Eagles winning the East.
I have the Eagles as well, too. Hard to go against them right now, especially when Dallas is probably going to finally lose Ezekiel Elliott.
I don't know how much of a surprise the Vikings should be. Now, Case Keenum's won four in a row. Jarrett McKinnon is one of the bigger surprises in the NFL. The Vikings haven't missed a beat with Dalvin Cook going down. They've got the receivers. They've got the tight end. They've got a good defense. They've got the third best point differential in the NFC. The Vikings, too, they've won four in a row. They seem to be, Dave, to be for real. So I got the Vikings winning the North.
Yeah, look, I mean, Green Bay don't have a quarterback now. Matthew Stafford and, you know, it's just Matthew Stafford and a bunch of guys and, you know, a decent secondary. We'll come back to Detroit in a minute here, maybe. But I have Minnesota with that defense of theirs winning the North.
The South, again, the most interesting of divisions here. The Saints have won five in a row after starting 0-2. Their defense seems to be much improved. I mean, you think about Kenny Vaccaro, the number one pick a bunch of years ago, I think 15th overall, was a guy who was kind of on the trade block last year in this offseason and was benched at various periods of trade time. He's been good. Marcus Lattimore is probably going to be the defensive rookie of the year. He has been the game changer for this Saints defense, playing corner, kind of a shutdown guy who's already one of the best corners in the league. Put him up there in the Jalen Ramsey category. So the Saints are there. Carolina, who knows what to make of them? They're good 1 week and awful the next. The Falcons, they snuck out a win in New York in terrible weather. Are they going to be back on track? And the Bucs have been a huge disappointment. Dave, I'll just do it in rooting interest here. I'll root for Drew Brees and the Saints, so I'll pick them to be the team out of the South.
Look, Atlanta is one of the few teams, maybe the only team, that has yet to play a game inside their own division. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. They got halfway through the season without a game in their division.
They played the Bears, the Packers, the Lions, the Bills, the Dolphins, the Patriots, and the Jets. So they have, of their remaining, they played seven games. So they got nine games left of the remaining nine games. One, two, three, four, five, six of them are in the division, David. That's amazing, right? They start off with Carolina this week. You got to think Atlanta's going to win four of their six division games and a couple more on top of it. So give me Atlanta to win that division.
Okay, interesting. If you're a fan of point differential in the NFC, the point differential goes, well, we'll get back to it with the Rams, but the point differential is the Eagles with plus 76 points. The Rams are plus 74 points. The Saints and the Vikes are mid-40s with the Seahawks. The Falcons, shockingly, are plus one with their 4-3 record. And then out west, Dave, Seattle, a huge win for them. They've now won four in a row. They haven't looked great doing it. They're only 2-2 on the road. They're 5-2. The Rams are 5-2. The Niners are obviously out of it. The Cardinals, I think, are generally out of it. So do you take the young Bucks, or is it easily the Seahawks here?
I think you got to just go with Seattle just because of, you know, who they are and where they've been and the experience. And when you look at, when you look at kind of the rest of their schedule, they got the Cardinals twice. I think they got the 49ers on there. I mean, don't make no mistake. They got some tough games against the Eagles and the Jaguars, I think. But I just think their schedule kind of favors them. So give me the Seahawks to edge out the Rams in that division.
I would like to go with the Rams. I really would, because they're fun to watch. Their offense under McVay has been great. This is, you know, maybe the Bills' defense, the Saints' defense, the Rams' offense, the surprising units in the NFL. So I'll root for them, but I'm with you. I'll take the Seahawks. So who are your two wild card teams in the NFC?
Okay. Look, I like what the Rams are doing. I think Wade Phillips is going to keep that, you know, regardless of what they do on offense. I think Wade Phillips has already got that defense in a position where they can keep him in a lot of games. And we know what happens when that happens. So give me the Los Angeles Rams to be one of those teams. And, geez, I almost have to flip a coin. Part of me wants to pick Detroit, David. I don't know what it is. But they just can't run the football good enough. And I think when you get it later into the season here, that's something that you got to do. I really want to put Detroit in there. I can't. I think New Orleans is playing a little bit better football. They got an experienced quarterback in Drew Brees there. I think they're going to win a few games here down the stretch. So give me the Rams and the Saints to be the wild card teams.
You kind of talked me into the Falcons, so I'm going to put them as one of my two. And, that leaves Carolina out. I'm going to take the Rams as well because I'm going to root hard for them. But I have the same sentiments you have about Detroit. I have similar sentiments about Washington. I'd like to see their receivers get it together. But they just so banged up on that O-line and tight end. I think they're a pretty good team. The Cowboys, neither of us mentioned the Cowboys at all. So they'll be in the conversation, but certainly you look at the NFC, it's wide open. We didn't mention the Packers and the Cowboys as teams that can have a shot there, nor the Carolina Panthers. So you're talking about three teams with big resumes in terms of what they've done the past couple of years left out. So, all right, there we have it. So our differences really are just two teams. one team on each side. I've got the Saints, and you've got who was your second wild card?
I had the Rams and the Saints.
Oh, you're the Saints. So we're the same group. We're the same group on the. We only have one team different making the playoffs here with 9 weeks left in the season, and it's the.
Baltimore and Buffalo. South. Baltimore and Buffalo are the different.
Baltimore and Buffalo. Okay, there you go. All right. So we're at the hour mark. Do you want to hit some? Do you want to hit the offense or the defense as position group stuff, or you want to save it for Friday?
Yeah, we can let's hit on some of that. Let's do some kind of first half recaps on Friday here and hit some of these questions the readers have. But in the first of all, I want to touch real quick on what Carnell Lake had to say yesterday during his talk with the media. You know, he's asked about
and hit on what Joey Porter had to say too.
Yeah. Let's hit on those two things. That way we end this with an actual Steelers Depot topic here instead of NFL Depot and Browns Depot. Carnell Lake was asked in so many words. You know, why haven't they played that much man coverage after it was talked about. You know, so much during the preseason and the such. And he says, I think starting back when we were talking about playing more man was just in the event that we would play man, we would at least practice it and have the ability to dial it up when we needed to. And I think that's still the plan. He was later asked what his comfort level is with man coverage, should they need to use it later in the season against a team such as the New England Patriots. And he says, you know, I'm comfortable with it. I really am and will continually evolve in that area. The thing about it is, we have a full playbook at our disposal now, and it helps to have Joe Hayden, someone that has man coverage ability, and really, that's what it's all about. If you got guys that can cover man-to-man, you feel more comfortable about playing it. Then he kind of ends at the end, is we have to be able to mix it up. Man-to-man is going to be part of it. It just is. I understand why so many – look, people don't care what's happened so far this season. Most of the yinzers on Twitter don't give a crap where the Steelers at right now. Their only concern is, can the Steelers beat the Patriots with what they have right now in the playoffs? That's all they're caring about right now. And look, part of me understands that, but you got to get there first. Along the way, outside of this past week, David, this past Sunday night game, the Steelers really haven't had to use a lot of man, to be quite honest with you. And in the second half of their season, they're probably not going to need a lot of man either with some of these quarterbacks that they're going to face. Now, would I have liked to seen them do a little bit better job and potentially throw some man at Detroit? Yes. That may have made a big difference in that game with the yardage had they done that. They didn't. We move on. They're going to use man against the Patriots. Now, whether that's in the Patriots in week 15 or whether that's Patriots in the playoffs, I think, and this is my speculation, I just don't think that they feel that they've had to use a lot of man so far, and I think they're being real judicious about the amount that they show because they want to kind of spring it on somebody later on, i.e. the Patriots. So I understand why they haven't done it. I understand why fans are mad that they haven't done it yet. But like I said, I think I got kidded about this the other day. And I said this jokingly. Let's worry about losing to the Patriots when they lose to the Patriots. I'm not predicting that's going to happen, but let's worry about getting to a key game against the Patriots first. All right, your thoughts.
Yes.
Your thoughts on that.
I think it's all correct. I mean, it's hard to argue with the success of the Steelers defense so far, although it does make me massively uncomfortable what happened against the Lions with the passing game. You know, it shows that if you don't get pressure on a quarterback in the NFL, a good quarterback can tear you apart, and that happened.
And we knew that. It's not like we got shocked by that, right?
No, and there's the other part of me says it's great to have it put on tape so that everybody knows it. Make sure everybody knows it, in and outside the locker room. Everybody knows it. So that means that the onus now falls on Keith Butler and Carnell Lake and Mike Tomlin to sort that stuff out, figure out the mistakes they made, figure out how to dial up the pressure better against an average offensive line, what you need to do. Look, you know, they managed to do what they needed to do in the red zone and to stop these guys. And, you know, one really great play by Javon Hargrave in the hole and some good stuff by Shazier and Vince Williams making plays in the red zone. And that was key. But, you know, the guys being able to put that kind of yardage up against it gives you pause. So I think you summed it up very well.
All right. The other key thing coming out from an assistant coach yesterday, Joey Porter was asked about James, you know, the lack of usage of James Harrison this year. And he basically said he understands that he understands the process. We know he's not always going to be happy, but we know he's going to be frustrated at times because he wants to play. He goes on to say, we're happy with the development of TJ, Chickalo. He says that Harrison's strong suit is when Bud Dupree. He goes on to say Harrison's strong suit is when we get to this cold weather and someone is going to try to come here and run the ball, I can put him in there and running isn't going to happen. He goes on to say, we get into cold and playoff time, I can have him in those tough situations and go rush the quarterback and get a sack because the situation is not too big for him. It's frustrating right now, but his time will come and we're going to need him.
So there are two things in that. He talks a lot about how I just tell James you're lucky to be here is essentially what he says in not so many words. Like, you're 39. They obviously want you around. Most guys at 30 are looking for their next their life's work. So just enjoy the fact that you're here, which was kind of interesting. He made no apologies for Harrison not being on the field. He said he can't drop into coverage the way TJ Watt can. And if James is going to be on the field, he's going to be on the field to stop the run or to rush the quarterback. The quotes that you threw out there. And then I think the thing that made me chuckle most is he said, James is like a little brother to me. Because nobody in the world thinks of James as a little brother to anybody. So just the whole idea of Joey Porter rubbing James Harrison on the head and saying, you know, do you want a Fresca? just made me laugh. It was no apologies. James is just – he's a member of the team. He's going to do what I tell him, and right now his job is not to play.
What you're saying is there are two people maybe in this world who can put James Harrison in a headlock and get him a noogie, and Joey Porter and Mike Tomlin might be those two people.
I think Mike would do it cautiously.
Look, I thought T.J. Watt was going to have a field day with Brian Mahalik. I thought he should have. Now, in Matthew Stafford's favor, he was getting the ball out in pretty decent time. It's hard to get to a quarterback. But there were instances where, one early where Matthew Stafford got outside. You know, it makes you wonder if that kind of thing would have happened if James Harrison's on that side. Who the hell's going to come in here and try to run the damn football against them later in the year? Baltimore?
Yeah, Baltimore. Green Bay.
You know,
Tennessee.
Yeah, maybe Tennessee here in a couple weeks. I don't know. I smell a lot of bullshit here. I don't know why. I'm not saying James Harrison needs to play 30 snaps a game. I, for one, was the one pointing out how James Harrison might be on the inactive list to start the season. But if you stay healthy the way this unit has, man, there's a way to carve out 10 snaps for him a game. There has to be. If you're dressing him, you better get him 10 snaps is all I got to say. If not, you're probably losing something somewhere on special teams. So, like I said, I don't expect him to get 25, 30 snaps a game. But if you're going to dress him, I think you need to get him 10 to 12 snaps a game at key portions of the game. It'll be interesting to see if that happens moving forward. You think they're going to – David, be honest with me here. What are the chances James Harrison doesn't dress against the Colts?
I mean, you know, I'll go back to the moats is less likely, but I was wrong about that before. So, you know, I guess if everybody's healthy, you know, we're going to go back to that game we play where two guys are going to have to sit. You're going to pick your, you know, the four or five obvious guys, with Brian Allen being one of the obvious guys. And then it's going to come down to, you know, Xavier Grimble, Arthur Moats, James Harrison. I mean, you know, could it be Cody Sensabaugh? You know, I guess if Allen sits, it won't be Sensabaugh. But, you know, we've named the names. So all those guys are back in play.
I mean, did the Colts scare you enough where you feel like you got to have James Harrison dressed for that game?
Colts don't scare me at all. It would have been the worst loss for the Bengals imaginable if they lost that game.
They tried. If not for
Colin Dunlap.
Carlos Dunlap.
Carlos Dunlap. Yeah,
picking that off. Look, like I said, I get it. I understand. But once again, if you're going to dress James Harrison, you should play James Harrison just for the sheer fact that you need to make sure none of the bolts rust up, I don't think, you know?
Okay. A couple little breaking news. Brock Osweiler is going to start for the Broncos against the Eagles. I'm not sure that's an enviable task. We didn't mention Marcell Dareus in the trade stuff that happened the week before, but he goes to the Jags just to add to that defense. The Bills got a sixth back, so essentially they traded Dareus and a third and a seventh. They got back a sixth and Benjamin. So evaluate how you want for their roster. All right, Dave, that's all I got.
Yeah, Martavis, we'll talk about him. We'll talk about a few of those other topics that we left out.
Juju, AFC Offensive Player of the Week.
Yeah, well-deserved, too, I think, as well, too. He did some nice some other things, some combative catches, at least one of those in that game, another block or two in that game as well, too.
And a very good article in the Post-Gazette, a little feature on Juju about his upbringing and background that'll give you a little more reason to love Juju. And I had not seen the draft day video of Juju getting the call from Mike Tomlin and then seeing his name announced by, of all people, Cam Hayward when the Steelers made the pick in the second round. I threw that up on Twitter the other day. Obviously, it's been out there since draft day. I just hadn't seen it. So if you haven't seen that, a little touching moment there as well with him and his whole family and a lot of his people around. Yeah. So that's a good one as well.
Yeah, we'll get to. We got a lot of these bye week questions here coming in from readers. If you want to continue, we'll hit on all these or as many as we can on Friday.
If we evaluate the Steelers at the midway point, we can do that next week too. So no urgency there. We'll definitely do reader listener emails on Friday.
Absolutely. And don't forget, but David, I guess our beat writer next week is going to be our buddy Phil, right? The always entertaining Phil B. Wilson. Remember?
Phil B. Wilson from Indy. Yeah, he's always got he has an opinion.
Yeah, so we'll definitely look forward to talking to him next week as well, too. In the meantime, you can follow Angry Dave on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do on the show and want to donate to the cause, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right navigational bar. David, until Friday.
Thanks again for the donations. Much appreciated. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.